wildfire, apparently. But he points out, many months, he's a pioneer, and other doctors pointing out since then, that people who get the COVID shot, they should have a D-dimer test both before and after to show blood clots. And he's found, and others are now finding, that over 60% of the COVID shot recipients are having blood clots, and he's predicting they'll be not alive in 3 years. And also, you know, the myocarditis, the pericarditis in adolescent males, that they're probably not going to recover.
They've
had heart attack.
Do us a favor. Please go ahead and post that on the page. People can read it and everything else like that, but we are going into NPR, and we got to make sure that we do our call numbers, okay? Hey, listen, thank you very much for joining us here on the Sunday Forum with our guest this morning, is Drew Smith. Drew, hang in there for a moment, okay? We have
NPR. Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. The G20 summit in Rome is wrapping up, with leaders releasing a final communique that's light on specific, concrete action to limit global warming. In compromise wording, they did commit to reach climate neutrality by or around mid-century, and they agreed to end public financing for coal-fired power generation abroad. It's building momentum for the bigger UN climate conference already underway in Glasgow. Pope Francis today delivered a message from the Vatican.
Preghiamo affinché il grido della terra e il grido dei poveri venga ascoltato.
He's telling world leaders at COP26 to hear, quote, the cry of the earth and the cry of the poor, and he's calling for concrete climate action for future generations. Before joining some 200 world leaders in Glasgow, President Biden is holding a press conference later today in Rome. NPR's Scott Detrow reports from Rome that Biden began his day by meeting with Turkey's president.
So far, the trip has produced the type of results Biden has been struggling to finalize in Congress. The administration announced an agreement with the European Union to de-escalate a costly, intense trade war over steel, aluminum, and retail tariffs. Leaders also backed a push to standardize a global minimum corporate tax rate to cut down on companies fleeing to tax havens. A big sweeping deal will be more challenging at Biden's next stop, though. The mood heading into a major UN climate summit in Scotland is skeptical that leaders will be able to secure major commitments to drastically cut greenhouse gases. Scott Detrow, NPR News, Rome.
A city councilwoman in Northern California says she is cooperating with the police investigation of a fatal shooting outside her home. NPR's Giles Snyder reports it happened during an outdoor party.
The Gilroy Police Department says the shooting occurred early Saturday morning at the home of City Council member Rebecca Armandares, where a large outdoor party was being held. One person was killed in an altercation, and police say two of the three people injured in the shooting are in critical condition. Police have not released any details on a potential suspect. Armandares released a statement to the San Francisco Chronicle, saying she and her family are cooperating with police and praying for those affected by the shooting. Gilroy is about 80 miles south of San Francisco. Giles Snyder, NPR News.
Nearly 30 million U.S. children who have gone through nearly 2 years of the pandemic unvaccinated are expected to soon have a shot. After the FDA signed off on vaccinating kids as young as five, the CDC weighs in this week. In anticipation, 15 million smaller dose Pfizer vaccines are shipping out to locations across the country. The White House says while appointments may open up as soon as this week, the program won't be fully up and running until next week. And you're listening to NPR News. One person trying to cross the southern border by swimming around a barrier in San Diego has died. Customs and Border Protection says it happened late Friday as some 70 people attempted to swim from Tijuana. The Coast Guard says it rescued 13 people from the water. It comes as Border Patrol reports a record 1.7 million migrant apprehensions at the southern border over the past year. An eminent British lawyer has single-handedly mounted a scheme to rescue more than 100 female Afghan judges and their families. Vicky Barker has more from London. Baroness Helena Kennedy, a human rights lawyer who also serves in Britain's House of Lords, has organized several airlifts from Kabul with the help of a team of lawyers working pro bono. The Observer newspaper reports Kennedy bought half a sheep for the wedding of a Taliban commander's daughter to get people without passports through one checkpoint, persuaded the president of Greece, a former judge, to take the women and their families, and got the government of the Republic of Georgia to let them transit. One of the first things the Taliban did when they retook Afghanistan was free all the country's prisoners, making any woman judge who sent them there targets. For NPR News, I'm Vicky Barker in London.
Protesters in Sudan are vowing to continue to take to the streets after several were killed this weekend in the biggest pro-democracy protests since the military seized power in a coup 6 days ago. Dozens of protesters were wounded as security forces opened fire on crowds at multiple locations. That's according to a Sudanese doctors' union. I'm Amy Held in Washington. It's NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Kauffman Foundation, working together with communities to break down barriers and prepare all people for success in their jobs and careers as employees or entrepreneurs. More online at kauffman.org.
88.5 WMNF wants to hear from local artists like you. If you're a poor around Tampa Bay, go to our website at WMNF.org. From there, click on Poets of the Month under the Programming tab. If you're selected, your poem will be broadcasted on our airwaves. Be one of WMNF's first Poets of the Month by going to WMNF.org.
All right. And we are back here on the Sunday Forum. And we're going to take a little bit of a break. We'll listen to a little bit of Rick James. We're going to wake you up this morning. It's 6 minutes. 6 minutes after the hour of nine. Right here on the Sunday Forum. Yes. We're going to wake you up this morning on WMNF. Yes, it's that time. Ain't that right, Miko?
Yes.
All right. Ain't that right, Billy?
Okay. You are listening to WMNF. We do want to thank our listener supporters for supporting the Sunday Forum last week. We met our goal, so we certainly appreciate the love you showed Sunday Forum last week. Thank you.
Travis Williams, thank you for joining us on the Facebook page. Tammy Jackson, D. Wilkins, thank you. Debbie Maris, we see you. We see you right there. Liam Limchek, what's going on? Thank you for joining us here on the Sunday Forum. Listen to the sounds of Rick James and Stand on the Top. Stand on the Top, along with the Temptations, right here on the Sunday Forum. Our guest, Drew Smith, USF librarian and specialist in genealogy, right here on the Sunday Forum. We're glad you joined us here, folks. This lovely Sunday afternoon is now 11 minutes after 9 on WMNF 88.5. This is yours truly is the voice of the Tampa Bay area, Walter L. Smith II, along with the members of the 4th Estate crew. We are glad to have you with us, and we are pumping the funk into your eardrum this morning, and this great knowledge and information we're sharing with each other here on the forum. After all, this is your Sunday Forum. We want to thank you for your support. Your support. We reached our goal last week of $2,000.
Oh, we did? Okay.
We did. We reached the goal of $2,000. So, hey, we thank you. We thank you.
Yes, thank you.
For all of your love and support, everybody out there. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Keep on, keep on. Drew.
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
I'm good. You're playing music for my 20s.
You like that, huh?
Oh, yeah. Brings me back.
Yeah. All right. We're glad to have you with us, Drew. We're glad to have you with us, man. And we are, you know, I'm excited because you are in a, not just because you worked with my mother, but because you are in a field of history that is very, very important to a lot of people. We have faced, as Black Americans, as Black people generally, just period, we have faced a lot of disrespect over the years, generationally. What we've seen in the past couple of years with regard to the Zion Cemetery is nothing new. But it just is such a shock that there are so many cemeteries, so many Black cemeteries that are out there that have undergone this type of, people who have endured this type of disrespect.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
it's not just Tampa. It's not just or St. Petersburg or Clearwater. It's all over the state of Florida. It's all over the country. I mean, that's why Dr. Antoinette Jackson is working with the Black Cemetery Network. They're a network of people all over the country who are finding these cemeteries and rediscovering them, trying to preserve them, learn about them. So, yeah, it's a national problem, and international, really. I mean, they're. You probably read about cemeteries up in Canada, that you know, Native American cemeteries that have been disrespected, and so it's an international problem.
Absolutely, I remember working in being in South Africa and seeing that, but being in South Carolina,
mm-hmm.
My wife and I went before we were married. We went to South Carolina just to I was doing some research, historical research, and we were in the Gullah Islands.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my mother, of course, as you know, of course, through research, we have family there. And when we got there to the islands, it was beautiful, beautiful. And you see these gravestones and tombs that are there that were dated back to the 1700s.
Yeah.
Now, some of them had been robbed.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were just there. They were there, and a few years later, we went back. They were still there. But then I remember going back after some time, probably around 2016, and they were gone.
Mm-hmm.
They were gone.
Yeah.
I mean, perfectly preserved as well as they were going to be, tombstones and tombs that were there, and the next minute they're gone, all because of gentrification that was taking place on the islands. And they've been fighting this for years. Mm-hmm. Years. I did not know that it was as bad as it was until I got there and I was in charge of the low country in terms of disaster resilience building. And I was shocked to see it firsthand. You hear about it, right? But then you see it firsthand, and you're like, how can people be so callous? Not careless, callous.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I need to be a psychologist. I don't understand that thought process. I mean, how people can't, they wouldn't want it done to their own families. I would assume.
Right, right.
To do it. So why on earth are they so disrespectful of other people's families? I don't get it. I probably will never get it. I don't understand it.
And we're not going to understand it from the standpoint that we don't think that way.
Yeah.
We don't think that way. But their concept of progress does not include us. If you have that type of thought process, then something's wrong with you.
Yeah, and not just cemeteries. I mean, we've seen this in Tampa Bay, too. We've seen neighborhoods, communities completely disrupted and destroyed just to build interstate highways and whatever it is, and tear it all down, and doesn't matter what happens to the people that were living there or what happens to their communities, just split them apart, and because they don't have the political power to fight back to prevent it.
Absolutely. Unbelievable stuff. We have callers. Let's go to the callers. Callers?
Caller, you're on air.
Oh, yeah. Hi.
Hi.
My name is Robin from Sarasota, well, currently. But I grew up in Berkeley, California during the 1960s. And it was a magical time. 40% of my high school was black, and 50% was white, and the rest were Asian. And we dropped it. We didn't start it, but we dropped it. There was racial strife before that, and we all decided as a group to just say, you know, we live here. We're all the same. And so it was a magical time. I went to my 50th high school reunion recently, and I was asked to speak about my career as an actor. And I dropped it. I just said, no, I need to tell a good story about what we did. And I said, okay, look to your left, look to your right. You know, in the old days, it would have been white people on one side, and it would be black people on the other side, and there wouldn't be a whole lot of communication. But we changed that. We dropped it. It's like we're all Americans. And I put that in my heart, and I've taken that all over the country.
I'm sorry, what is your name again?
Robin.
Robin?
Yeah.
Robin, thank you very much for those words. Let me let me share.
Yeah.
A perspective.
Yeah.
I think that is it, for some people that works. For some people does
for
work.
For us it did.
Yeah. You know, and it might have worked. I don't judge people's situations from that, you know, at all. If it worked, man, look, thank God it did.
Yeah.
Thank God it did, especially back then.
Oh, 1971.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
50 years ago.
Absolutely. Listen, but let me give a perspective, though.
All right.
One of the things that we cannot do is we have to be aware of the fact that these things are happening, number one.
Oh, I agree.
And I don't think that you disagree with me. I don't think you disagree with me at all. I just want to make sure that I voice his point. And Drew, I want to hear from you if you have a point on this. And be aware of the fact that these things happen. That people are nasty like that. They are, as I call them, troglodytic.
Yeah. No, one of my most amazing moments, I live in Florida now,
mm-hmm.
and one of my most amazing moments was this, these two guys in a open Jeep flying a big-ass Confederate flag, battle flag, on the back, singing along to rap music. And I said, what the heck am I looking at?
Wow.
This is amazing. You guys are singing along to, you know, this major black tune, and you are... So, yeah, work still needs to be done. Absolutely.
Yeah. But no, I can appreciate your situation. And,
well, it got me. It just got me. It's just like, this is a huge contradiction.
Right.
This is amazing.
And we certainly can't sweep it under the rug, right?
Yeah.
You know, and take on the, as much as we would love for that to be the case, we hear people like, Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
I totally disagreed with Morgan Freeman.
Right.
You know, it was altruistic. His viewpoint at that particular time was altruistic, but what bothered me about it was the negation, how he negated the fact. Right. It was, to me, it was disingenuous. And
yeah,
it was,
no, I get it.
Right.
And as you hinted in a previous comment, you only really rent a grave. That's why, you know, people say, well, how do you want to be buried? And I said, well, I've had so much seafood in my life that bury me at sea. I'm a payback.
I hear you. Well, Robin, listen, thank you so much. We appreciate your call here.
Yeah? All right, pal.
All right. Peace to you. Drew? Peace.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts about what you just heard?
Well, I mean, you know, we have a lot of history of feel good moments. I could share my own, but I think the point in terms of the topic we're talking about now is that by revealing this history, I think the only way we can move forward is to start with history. I don't, you know, if you don't know what's come before, you can't understand what's going on today. And everything we experience today, all of the discrimination and racism and so forth, is based on history. And we've got to fully understand what has happened, you know, who did what, when did they do it, and what was the effect on the community. And I'm so thrilled that, you know, cemeteries are, you can erase a lot of things. I get, well, apparently people think they can erase cemeteries too, unfortunately, but you can erase a lot
But to be honest, cemeteries are hard to erase. They're, as even Zion came back, come back into our historical knowledge. I think the point is that cemeteries are a permanent record, or they're designed to be a permanent record. They are, and they tell us something about the world as it was. Walter, you know, as I've done this research, and my other volunteers have done this research, I mean, we've read a lot of newspaper stories from the time, you know, from the 1920s and around and everything. Some of it's very disturbing. You know, this is stuff that's upsetting. The language used is upsetting. The style, the content of what is being said about the African-American community. It's hard to deal with. It's not fun. But you got to look at it. You can't not look at it in order to fix it. In order to start fixing it. So I don't know if that is a response to what, you know, was just said, but I think the point is that, yeah, we can find a few breakthrough moments, but the bigger problem is still there.
Right. Let's go to our other caller on line three.
Okay. Caller, you're on air.
Hello.
Caller.
So this is Michael Randolph. How you doing?
Hey, Mike, how you doing, man?
I'm good.
Good.
I'm traumatized. You know I live in Grover's Park.
So yes.
The cemetery over here, believe it or not, I'm about 8 doors down to the cemetery where black people were simply built over. So I feel that pain. And I'm happy with Housing Authority going to make sure we create that opportunity and let other people know who died and give those names like that. Mm. But the other reason why I'm calling today is because of the community PAC agreement, as you know, between the related groups and West Tampa CDC. As a result of that, we are rolling out the technology, wealth building, and job creation center. Two pieces that's important to this. First is the tech center, in which we're going to be training young people in West Tampa how to do game applications, mobile applications, artificial intelligence, software, and program development. The other piece of that is working with businesses, especially creating home-based businesses in West Tampa to specifically deal with female heads of households. So those are the things that are coming down the pipeline. Continuing, your platform is so good in terms of letting people know a black perspective, and I think that's very important, in addition to other perspectives. So keep representing us. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. We appreciate that. Mike Randolph, for those of you who don't know, Mike Randolph is, in my mind and in a lot of people's minds, he's a legend. This man he came down from Baltimore, Maryland. I met him 20 years ago. And we've been working together ever since on trying to come up with ways to transform our frontline communities so that we have better resources to sustain ourselves without having to depend so much on government, local government, to do it for us in any way. So, Mike, listen, man, thank you. Keep doing what you're doing, brother. We have another caller.
Yes, we do. Caller, you're on air.
Yeah, hold on. This is Life.
Life, what's going on, brother?
What's going on, brother?
All right.
I just really want to appreciate the discussion, and I don't have much to say about the cemetery issue other than it's you know, it's an obvious question of land, as much as it is a question of the desecration of our history and our existence. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important to keep in mind. I did want to respond, though. I heard this guy who called in and said something about us all being the same, and nothing could be farther from the truth. We're not all the same. Some of us are trapped in America, colonized here, and others of us are colonizers that certainly belong to the colonizer nation. And the only people who have some advantage from liquidating the colonial question and the distinctions between colonizers and colonized people or the colonizer, you know, unfortunately, many people of the colonized nation take on the thoughts and perceptions of the colonizer because of our so-called education, let's say it differently, our training in schools and what have you. So when we speak with our colonizer's tongue. We think with our colonizer's brain, and we start saying stupid stuff like we're African and American at the same time, colonized and colonizer at the same time. And but the reality is, I mean, just the material reality is as long as classes exist, and they do, as long as you have one nation of people with power who dominate and control everything about another nation of people's everyday lives, so that the latter, so that the colonized people have to work to produce and reproduce life, not for ourselves, but for the people in power, there's a difference between us. And the righteous struggle, the righteous position, the principled stance is to stand with the colonized people against colonialism. With, number one, to recognize the damn difference and stand with the people who are colonized against the colonial situation, and struggle with the colonized to overturn that violent and oppressive relationship. These attempts to liquidate it, make it all the same, it being the colonial relationship, make us all the same and what have you, is that does nothing other than serve to benefit and perpetuate the colonial relationship. And it's and nobody should be applauded for that type of position. And I just wanted to share that. I appreciate you allowing me to share.
Okay. All right. Hey, listen.
Before we go, I do want to say that there's a Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations march on the White House and conference following that, on the following day, and that's November 6th and 7th. People can make it to D.C. People have the money, the time to make it to D.C. People should do that. It's very important. If you don't have the time to make it to D.C., but you have the money, you should sponsor somebody to go who has the time but can't afford to make the trip. And if you can't make the trip, you can see it online. Go to blackisbackcoalition.org. But it's a very important thing. It's a call for freeing political prisoners and prisoners of war, and a call for Black community control of the police, so that these colonial soldiers don't have to live with the reality of colonial soldiers killing us in our communities and brutalizing us other ways. So that's the push, that's the call, and I would encourage people to link up with that.
Blackisbackcoalition.com.
BlackIsBackCoalition.org.
Okay. All right. .org. Okay.
I know I cut you off. You were going to say something, but I just wanted to get that in.
Oh, no, brother. No. As a matter of fact, I was just going to thank you for calling, man.
Right on, man. You know, I really appreciate what you do on the Sunday Forum. And, I appreciate you letting me share. We'll talk in the future, I'm sure.
All right. You got it. Listen, folks. This is Attorney Life Malcolm. And he is, if you want to listen to him, please do on the In Touch News, which is every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Every Tuesday at 6 p.m., the Life Malcolm Show on In Touch News. Let's go to our next caller. Folks, if you want to call in, please do 813-239-9663. Our guest this morning is Drew Smith. Drew Smith is a genealogist and is assisting with my mother with the genealogical studies that she's doing on our family, and he's giving us a word on how we can do some of our own genealogical studies and where we can seek assistance and resources to do that. But we're also talking about the situations that are similar to, or the situation that is at hand with regard to the Zion Cemetery right here on the Sunday Forum. Let's go to our next call.
Okay, caller, you're on air.
Walter Smith in the 4th State.
What's happening?
I'm glad y'all met your goal. I think we contributed just a little modicum to it, but you met your goal. But talking about these cemeteries, let me just say this. I don't think anybody around here be talking about no cemeteries that work for Dad Lewis. Now, I'm going to keep it real. But right now, they got my president of the NAACP all upset and all distorted. But this woman, single-handedly, And a couple other people from the Times and the guy that's the senator, man, a good friend of mine. A lot of people don't know that. And he know more history than anything from reading death certificates. But, you know, it goes to show that black history and black life was not mattered to us. And you got to understand this era. As the guy was saying, him reading the newspaper articles and all, I don't read them all. And a lot of them are gangsters. What basically, it comes down to this. We had our own thing, black folks, now I'm talking, and I'm going to get the cemetery of black folks. We had our history. They gave us our little spot. We had our funeral home. We had some prominent, very prominent black folks around here. I mean, Madam Walker wasn't the only millionaire around here back in the 20s and 30s. And what you got to understand is that was our heyday, even though then came the Depression. But what happened in the 20s? But NAACP was formed a few years before that. Well, what happened? The Ku Klux Klan was killing people, man. The Ku Klux Klan in the South was knocking people out, man. People scared. Black people scared. Did you know the local branch of the NAACP shut down for a couple years because people were getting killed? Like Meacham, the first female president of the local Hillsborough County branch. So, you know, I'm just saying that our history has always been tried to be destroyed. Our black history's always tried to be distorted. Matter of fact, they wouldn't even let us read it because we had to learn to read what? Sitting at the slave plantation, read a Bible. Mm-hmm. Throwing all this shit in our head. So black people didn't realize that our history will always try to be destroyed. It goes all the way back before Egypt, before all of that. It's always been tried, knocking noses off the statues because it was too African, too proud. So what we got to realize is that our history will be covered up. The history we're doing now will be covered up. And until we start documenting and doing like some cultures have, they put it in stone. They put it where it couldn't be moved. You can't move the pyramid. You can't put it down where it's going to try to last forever. Put it in caves, wrote on walls. So what I'm saying is black people have always been thrown to the curb, covered up. But one thing I can tell you, God will make everything come to light. The history will eventually come to light. And thank you for Beth Lewis standing up. I know she ain't feeling good today because everybody's beating her down on every TV, radio show around here. But I'm gonna hit, man. You mess with a vet, I'm gonna hit you. We may not get long, but I'm gonna hit you. So the bottom line is, let's cut this out. Let's get this history told, Walt. And your mother did a great job of telling your family history. And I can't wait to see the third and fourth book about it in this genealogy, because my people up there in Georgia, not Cairo, but up there in Georgia too. I remember my great-great-grandfather had an opportunity to see him alive. He was 100. Grandpa Isaac was 101. When wow. I mean. So what I'm saying, you know, we live long in the actually, I'm a George, not a Robinson. I keep telling y'all, I'm the FBI George Robinson. But I just want to say this, Walt, that we got to learn that if you don't know your history, and that's what a lot of these kids don't understand, you're going to repeat the bad things that happened.
Absolutely.
So let's learn that we were destroyed, the interstate destroyed us, okay, and that's nationwide. Cemeteries in the 20s was covered up because of the Ku Klux Klan. And then the end, in the 50s, it became valuable real estate as the cities grew from being unincorporated to being incorporated. So as the city grew, so did the taking of land. And it ain't stopped yet. This taking of property without just compensation, this desecration of sacred ground is always going to occur. And that's why the NAACP exists in the first damn place, is to make sure that people of color and everybody else got somebody out here fighting for the cause, and we take a beating, you take a licking, you get cussed at, you get talked about, you get turned against each other. But one thing, Gerard, to know, I don't care about none of that. I'm a hit man, and we're going to keep it rolling. And I just want to thank you for having a nice show. But keep it real, keep it black, and tell your kids and your children about black history, because it's being covered up, and not the fake news that we read about. Okay?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you, man. We appreciate it, Joe Robinson. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Joe Robinson. There's no one like him. No one like him. you know, Drew, one of the things that we have another caller, one of the things that is very, very important, and I spoke of it earlier by referring to it as sweeping it under the rug. You know, we can't, we cannot, and there is a repetitive aspect to this whole thing that we're seeing with regard to cover-ups or tearing up our communities and so forth. There is a repetitive action here. We're seeing a pattern. If you have not seen it, then I don't know what you're looking at.
Yeah.
I mean, like, okay, you know, we have urban renewal, right? It takes away housing. It takes away, it destroys. It destroys
communities.
Yeah, it destroys communities. But it's supposed to be called, but it's called urban renewal.
Yeah.
We talk about the loss of historical pieces. I did an interview with a young lady by the name of Fadia, who is an excellent journalist, broadcast journalist. And I think it was featured on Spectrum News 9, I believe, where I was discussing with her the history of Afro-Cubans.
Mm-hmm.
And the danger that we face in our history is when we do things or ignore things thinking that everything's okay.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be all right, that we don't have to fight a battle.
Mm-hmm.
That's disturbing to me. When you know, we didn't want, nobody wants to have to fight a battle. Nobody wants to have to do it, but we have to.
Yeah.
We have to now. I didn't want to have to teach my son what I've had to teach him about how to drive around. But I have to, you know?
Yeah. And you know, that's something I'm glad that there's been more effort at my university. And of course, I don't speak on behalf of my university, but I can applaud some actions that have been taken. But for me, it was simply the speaking out by the Black faculty and staff just a couple years ago, who really made it much more visible, I think, and made that effort to make it visible. You know, because I could go on campus, let's say this was before COVID, but I go on campus, I could go on there at 10 o'clock at night and go into my office, right? And no one, I wouldn't think about it. I wouldn't think about being a white guy going on campus and going to my office. But, you know, if I were Black, I would clearly not be in that same situation. I'd have to think about it, about what am I going to, you know, are the campus police going to stop me and question me?
Right.
You know, and that's the thing that, you know, I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, but I'm just saying that's something that white people don't even think. A lot of us aren't even aware of that.
Right.
We don't think about it because it's nothing that changes our lives. I mean, it should, but it doesn't. So anyway, that's there's an ongoing fight here. It's a battle that I don't think it'll be done in our lifetime, my lifetime anyway, but it's still worth working on.
I know. And well, it certainly is worth, like you said, it is certainly worth working on. There's a movie that's out that I've watched several times with Ben Affleck and Zoe Saldana, which is called Live by Night.
Mm.
Part of the movie was actually shot here in Tampa. It's based on, it's fictitious, but it was based on, it takes place in the early 1900s, and it is based on life here in Tampa during that time period. And it is an excellent movie. I recommend that people watch it. It does talk about racism in extraordinary ways. And it doesn't just touch on it. It deals with it. It does deal with it. Is it a gangster movie? Yes, it is. It is a gangster movie. It deals with prohibition. But it takes a very, very, when you look at it from the standpoint of Tampa, I think it's the first time that I've ever seen an actual movie that dealt specifically with Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's early years. Part of it was shot in South Carolina in order to get the feel of what Tampa was like before it was fully developed in the early 1900s.
Right.
Excellent movie. excellent movie, I believe. We have a caller. We got another caller. Yes. Caller,
you're on air.
Hi.
How are you? What's the Sunday Forum?
So I just wanted to comment on the evolution that happened to me from when I was 8 years old and I first asked my mom and my older brother, why, you know, what's wrong? Why don't you like black color people? Okay, and I really didn't get an answer. And my mom lived in Detroit in a less fortunate, you know, a lower. My grandpa dug his own basement. It was that kind of neighborhood.
Right.
So I went on to become a softie, a developer. And so I went through this oblivious period in the 70s and 80s where I thought, okay, we're making some progress. We're doing all right. You know, we got the schools that people can, like, move to and all. And I started to see these ugly things peeping out from, like, the supremacists, really, in the 90s. I'm like, oh, my God, this is really happening. And sure enough, here we are. Fast forward. It was like, it is an evolution for each individual. And I don't know if it's happening in society. I sure hope it is. I'm not the kind of guy that I might go to shows or festivals and things like that and hang out, and I don't mind. I would enjoy hanging out with colored people. I worked with a really nice couple of guys and a couple of girls that were programmers, and you know, you're all right. You know, we're all okay. It's just, there's some people that are really hell bent for leather to go back or something, or to, you know, they're afraid. I think we really need to start studying why they're afraid, why they're so flipped out, you know, and we have to realize that we have to be careful when we talk about what has really been a crucifixion of the whole getting better and gaining a position in society, which was the real estate redlining that's happened since the Civil War. It was promoted and then it turned into real redlining, and then the federal government wrapped its arm around it. And for as much as I worked for and love what the federal government does, because I'm a Democrat, and although I worked in defense, there are parts of it. Those people that are against equality are in the federal government as well as the state government and the local government. So we have to all just aware. It starts with awareness. It's kind of like alcoholism. You have to know you're sick. Mm-hmm. You have to know you're sick, and then now you can start dealing with it. And you have to be willing to learn and say, how do I start dealing with it? And you know, sometimes you have to have people standing up with lamps saying, this is something that works. This is something that works. And lamps are metaphors for, these are the, you know, like the tablets that say, here's what we ought to do. You know, don't move away at a festival. That's really bad. You know, don't get uncomfortable. Try and be relaxed. Treat everybody like you treat anybody else. And, I gotta say, you know, I had no idea you guys were going through this when I was going to college in the 80s. And that will weigh on me the rest of my life. That's just the stupidity of it, the ignorance.
Yeah. I believe racism is a mental illness, because never justified anything they've ever said.
It's a distortion of the personality to conquer fear of not having control, of not having supremacy. It's a psychosis. And whether these people are not born like that, they're not psychopaths. They are sociopaths.
Right.
They were raised this way, and we saw it on that movie Civil War that just came out, and that other movie with, and God help me say the name of the movie again, that you guys were just talking about.
Oh, Nomic. Live by Night.
And then say that again.
Live by Night.
Oh, yeah, Live by Night.
Mm-hmm. So some of these guys are in fact psychopaths. I mean, for them to, by definition, go out and literally go and act out the move.
Well, I'm really picky about, I don't give grace to psychopaths or sociopaths, and what specifically is being born that way and being wired wrong, and that happens, but a lot of it is how they are raised and how they're indoctrinated in the schools. I was raised up in the North, and I had really good teachers, and we studied European history and American history, and we didn't have we had like a segment on African American, and we had segments on Chinese. Those were more advanced studies, but I mean, all you need to do is study. For some parts, you need to study American history and be aware. And now I can't do my job anymore. I can't sit in front of computers for a long 10-hour days. Not for 20 years now. But wow. I've studied. I've really been looking at what happened in the 1800s. When we went through this movement. The British got rid of their slavery, but they sided with the South because there was money to be made. But I'm oversimplifying, but forgive me for that. They it led up to these debates that everybody saw and everybody heard about, and there were all these debates, and then we had the states being brought in from the West, which weren't states yet. So
Missouri Compromise. I mean, 1851. It is a pathological process. Drew, are you there with us, Drew?
Oh yeah.
It's a pathological process that is, in fact, the term psychopath does in fact fit right into the concept, because when you look at the definition of it, of psychopath, they talk about the issue of poor judgment,
they don't recognize that what they're doing is wrong.
Right, because they think that what they're doing is normal.
Yeah, that it's okay.
It's okay. It's okay to kill black people because they're black, because they're not human. That within itself is a sick concept. Yeah.
Which is more related to sociopathy, which means they have no clue.
Right.
But on a huge scale, how we arranged ourselves or evolved, how we evolved as a society from agrarian, and we didn't necessarily throw people out of the group because we needed everybody to survive, we needed to work so that we could advance our technology, and that's how it happened. That's how we went from living, as hunter gatherers to agrarian to technology. And we can't afford to do that now. That's insane. This society that was built on the societies of the past, and it has to self-correct. You have to feed information into it, and to make improvements when you notice that there are problems. And problem is an understatement.
Right.
God, I'm monopolizing. I apologize.
Sorry. Listen, we appreciate the call.
All right.
We appreciate the call, and we appreciate the concept. Because it has in fact described what has happened, and so thank you very much for your call, Drew. We have come to the point we've got to wrap up the show.
Yeah.
But I think we have reached a point in our discussion about Zion that actually defines the thought process. Mm-hmm. These people were sick.
Oh yeah, that said, yeah, they looked at the graves that were there and said, yeah, they're not people. We can do anything we want to with them. They probably thought no more of the cemetery when they dealt with it than they would a pet cemetery or something like that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Just amazing. Absolutely amazing. Yeah. Last caller, I'm sorry. We cannot take that call. I apologize. We do have to wrap up. This has been truly a great conversation. Yumiko, Mabili, I think you guys agree.
Yes, I agree.
Because we're looking at this at a different level. The discussion is a discussion that's being had at a different level. Because what we're thinking of is the psychological aspect, even though we're not psychologists or psychiatrists. We are looking at it from a psychological perspective. And trying to make sense of something that really there's no sense that can be made of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
At least not to a thinking, feeling human being.
Right, right. Originally, that was who lived in those areas originally.
In where the cemetery was.
Uh huh.
That was an African American community.
Okay. And I'm asking the question so to make sure everybody understands where we were, what was there then.
No, it was, and then what happens is, yeah, and then it becomes the property becomes eventually owned by whites again, and in the 1920s, and then by the 1950s, that's prime real estate for white suburbanites, and that's when Robles Park apartments were constructed for whites. And the black community that was already there was driven out to make the apartments.
I hope everybody heard that.
Yeah. And then eventually the African American community came back. I mean, certainly into the apartments. And then, but yeah. So, I mean, it was a cycle of community desirable property. We want it. The white community wants it, so let's tear down all these black-owned houses, and we will build a massive apartment complex for whites so they can commute quickly down to the city of Tampa.
Wow.
In the early 1950s.
This is this is what we mean by pattern. It is the same damn thing that we're talking about in East Ybor.
Mm-hmm.
East Tampa. It's the same thing in West Tampa. It's to make way. The discussions that we've had in the past 10 years, 15 years plus, have been on how to make life easier for white people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
While at right. the same time, we ignored everything else. Any infrastructural change that was made was not made for us. It was made for white people.
Yeah. Same thing with Tropicana Field.
Wow.
You know? I mean, there's three cemeteries underneath the parking lot at Tropicana Field.
Oh, my God.
And under the interstate next to it. So, yeah.
But listen, I want to thank you, Drew, for your contribution to this conversation, for being a guest here on the Sunday Forum, and helping us to make sense of this whole thing.
Thank you for having me, Walter. It's been a real honor, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And definitely, please come back. We're going to have you come back so we can have more conversations about this type of thing. So thank you again.
All right,
take care. Really appreciate you. All right, take care, Drew. Folks, listen, we want to take a moment and thank you for joining us here on the Sunday Forum. This has been truly, truly revealing conversation.
Yeah, I was going to say informative.
Very informative, I think.
Yeah.
as we really begin to take a deeper dive beyond just understanding what's the obvious. The obvious is that we have black people that were forgotten, ignored, that were buried, were supposed to be buried with dignity, but to hell with that, we're going to make things better for white people. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Easier come, you, the whole nine, right? Mm-hmm. So we build over. And then what we do is we sit there and we accept it as such. There's no accepting something like that. You don't accept that. This is why we have to watch patterns. We have to keep fighting. We have to keep organizing. And folks, this is what the Sunday Forum is all about. And thank you for joining us here for another edition of the Sunday Forum here on WMNF 88.5 Tampa, Sarasota, St. Pete. This is the voice of the Tampa Bay area, Walter L. Smith II, along with my members of the Fourth Estate crew. And as always, from my voice to the airwaves, to the hearts and the minds of all of you, we love you. And there's absolutely nothing you can do about it here on the Sunday Forum.